Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, good evening and welcome to the John Whitmer Show, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman Group of Companies. Thrilled to have you with us this evening here at your local liberal resistance headquarters. Coming up here in just a few minutes, we're going to need all the liberal resistance we can get. Greg Williams will be here. We're going to debate Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. And trust me, I'll need all the defense I could get for that one. Glad to have you with us this evening. If you'd like to call in, our studio lines are open. You can reach us at 316-869-1330 by email at john@knssradio.com, on Facebook and True Social at The John Whitmer Show, and on X at John R. Whitmer. Reach out. Would love to hear from you. Also, a reminder, you can catch my new daily feature, the Carry On Commentary. It's a 60-second daily feature that's hosted by me, packaged up. It's heard Monday through Friday during the days here on KNSS. So listen to that every day on KNSS, the Carry On Commentary. Also, don't forget the Sedgwick County Republican Party Grand Ole Picnic coming up September 21st. More information is to come on that. I want to thank everybody for coming out to the fundraiser we had just last week at Cozine. Raised over $15,000 for our Get Out the Vote efforts. So appreciate everyone's support. Getting ready to come out so that we can beat Democrats coming up in the fall. Speaking of beating Democrats, got a great show tonight. Kansas Attorney General Chris Kobach will join us here to kick off our 8 o'clock hour to discuss a lawsuit filed by his office in federal court this week designed to stop the Biden-Harris administration from giving illegal aliens Obamacare benefits. Yeah, taxpayer-paid health insurance to illegals. That sounds like a brilliant idea. We'll bring you another Why Can't We Be Friends segment this week, featuring a conversation between myself and longtime radio personality Greg Williams. We've done this once before. We're going to try and do it periodically, where we respectively present a conservative and liberal perspective on various topics. Tonight, we'll debate the merits of the two 2024 presidential candidates, Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. Needless to say, I will not be representing the Harris-Waltz campaign. Sedgwick County Commissioner Ryan Beatty will be with us to discuss their proposal to create an 8-quarter or half-cent county sales tax designed to decrease property taxes. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls at 316-869-1330. So we've got a great show planned for you, and I, of course, want your calls. Before we get to all that, however, as you know, the Democratic National Convention, I'd like to call it the Democrat National Convention because I don't think there's much Democratic anymore about that party. But the DNC kicks off tomorrow, and I want to take a few moments to prepare you for what's coming should you be ill-advised enough to tune in to watch the malarkey fest that we're going to get over the next 4 days. A spoiler alert, it's going to be more of the same. You know, recycled talking points, divisive rhetoric, and a whole slew of empty promises. First things first, don't believe the hype. The Democrat National Convention is not going to be a beacon of hope or unity. Instead, brace yourselves for a parade of woke commentary and pandering that will make your head spin. We'll see the usual suspects roll out their carefully rehearsed lines about how America needs to embrace their vision of inclusivity, which somehow always seems to exclude half the country. Expect speeches that take aim at MAGA extremists, because in the Democrats' world, if you support former President Trump or his policies, you must be part of some dangerous fringe element. And let's talk about what's really going to be on display. The convention is going to be a masterclass in blaming Republicans for everything wrong in the country, despite the fact that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have been running the show for the last 3.5 years. From economic woes to social issues, you'll hear that it's all the fault of the GOP and by extension Donald Trump and by more extension you. They'll paint a picture of a country in crisis and they'll tell you that the only their policies, those policies that haven't been able to successfully implement or manage in the past, can now all of a sudden save us. It's a well-worn script that's designed to stir up anger and division rather than offer any real solutions. Kamala Harris will roll out a slew of empty promises that if she thought could actually work, or if she had any intention of actually implementing, she'd have done so 3.5 years ago. But that's not their plan. Again, they're just pandering. And speaking of solutions, don't expect to see any of those. Don't expect to see any concrete plans for addressing our nation's most pressing issues. The Democrats have mastered the art of crafting lengthy wish lists that sound great on paper but fall apart under scrutiny. Their socialist utopian promises about expanding social programs, increasing healthcare access, or combating climate change are always grand, but rarely come with a roadmap for implementation or any way to pay for themselves. They might talk about ambitious goals, but they often neglect to provide the specifics or the means to pay for any of it. We're talking about tax increases that could hit our hardworking Americans and businesses, or perhaps a borrowing spree that will add to our already staggering national debt. We'll hear a lot about fairness and equity, but what does that mean in practical terms? It often translates to higher taxes for the middle class, or more regulations on business, and more government intervention in our lives. The Democrats are adept at making it sound like they're working for the little guy while actually pushing policies that could stifle economic growth and limit opportunities. And folks, let's not forget about the blame game. The rhetoric will be thick and furious. Trump will be a central figure of criticism, not because of any particular policy or action he took, but because he's become a convenient scapegoat for every problem under the sun. The Democrats seem to believe that by continuously attacking Trump and his supporters, they can distract from their own shortcomings and their own failures at leadership and failures to avoid to address their own failures in office. Unity, you won't find that in Chicago next week. The Democrat Party's definition of unity often seems to involve getting everyone to agree with their worldview and marginalizing those who don't. Real unity requires listening, understanding, and, wait for it, compromise. Qualities that seem to be in short supply at their conventions, and instead expect a lot of self-congratulatory backpatting and lectures about how the other side is to blame for everything. So as we head into this convention, keep your eyes peeled and your critical thinking caps on. Don't be swayed by the flashy rhetoric or the rock and roll music or the celebrities that they'll trot out fresh from their, you know, private jet rides into Chicago. The emotionally charged speeches are just that, speeches. Remember that actions speak louder than words, and history has shown us that the promises made at these conventions often fail to materialize into tangible results. This convention, the Democrat-Mike convention, might make for some entertaining television, but when the cameras are off and the speeches are over, we'll be left with the same old problems and no new solutions. It's up to us to stay informed and stay skeptical and demand accountability from those who seek to lead our nation. That's what's coming up for you starting tomorrow and running through Thursday. And, hey, you know what? On second thought, you'd be better off watching paint dry. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll bring you another Why Can't We Be Friends segment featuring a conversation between myself and radio personality Greg Williams debating the merits of the two 2024 presidential candidates. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity Kansas. Every Thursday, AFP Action activates the largest grassroots community operation in the country. They join together and phone into key federal races across the U.S. Every week presents a new opportunity for you to join thousands of dedicated citizens committed to being the most impactful grassroots army in America. You can join AFP every Thursday from 3 to 7 p.m. in order to phone for freedom. If you'd like more information, visit AmericansForProsperity.org to sign up today. And while you're online, don't forget to follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and True Social pages, and follow me on Twitter or X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, the November 5th general election is 79 days from today. The Democratic National Convention begins tomorrow. And now that National Democrats have finished their palace coup and installed their unelected nominee, I figured what better way than the present, or better time than the present, rather, to bring in my favorite liberal for another episode of Why Can't We Be Friends, in order to discuss, you know, the merits of the pros and cons of the two campaigns. So with us now is our longtime radio personality, Greg Williams, my favorite liberal. How are you, brother?
I'm doing good. My favorite conservative friend.
How many do you have?
I've got a few, actually. Yeah, I've got a few.
Okay, yeah, that's good.
I'm sure not many of them are in your audience tonight.
They might. See, you know, one of the things I did in preparation for this, I wanted to go to the two websites. I went to, and by the way, if I start getting spam or emails from the Harris campaign, I'm going to blame you.
Oh, God.
But I went to KamalaHarris.com. I just plug, whatever, Kamala, Kamala, right, whatever right. her name is. I went to Kamala?
Yeah, yeah.
KamalaHarris.com, and I looked at her website, and then I went to DonaldJTrump.com and went to his website, okay? On the very first tab on DonaldJTrump.com, very first tab is platform. And you can click it, and there are 20 platforms. This is his platform.
Are you talking about that clown of a 2025 project?
No, 2025 is not affiliated project with the campaign.
Yeah, he embraces and supports.
He actually has not said that.
Okay.
He has said he does not support that. He has we got to stick to facts.
Okay.
He has said he does not support Project 2025. He has his own platform, and it's listed on his website. Okay. When you go to Kamala Harris, there's Meet Kamala.
Kamala.
There's Meet Tim Walz, and then there's Volunteer, and of course there's Donate. But there is no policy platform anywhere on her website. You can get no information about them, about what they stand for, about what positions that you're looking to make sure I'm correct. But there's not a single piece of policy information on this website at all. I'm looking at it as we sit here. So my first question for you, Greg, is why? Why won't they put out any policy positions? What are they hiding? Why is she afraid?
Well, first of all, let's look at the facts and how much we have done well under the Biden administration that most of my Republican friends and Trump supporters fail to understand. Inflation.
Okay, for the record, he's not answering the question.
I am answering the question. The total jobs added by Joseph Robinette Biden, 15.7 million jobs compared to Donald Trump's 6.7 million. Not even counting the 2.7 million jobs he lost with the pandemic. Okay?
We'll pause, because you do know that according to Forbes, because I knew you were going to ask this, the New York, and Forbes is not a liberal paper, the New York Times and the Washington Post, 93% of the jobs added under Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, were only
Kamala
Harris, whatever. Okay, Biden Harris. We'll just say under Biden Harris, 92% of the jobs added under Biden Harris were just jobs that were coming back after the pandemic. The other 8% are government created jobs. So those numbers are artificially inflated.
But, well, and the data doesn't support Trump's claim that he had the greatest economy in the history of the world either.
We can address that, but answer my first question.
Biden wins that argument under his...
I get that. Answer my first question. Why can't I find a single policy position that she's running on?
You know, to get a clear answer to that question, I suggest that you speak to the campaign manager of the Harris campaign.
Okay, well, then let me back this up. You're obviously supporting Harris... Harris Waltz, so I don't have to keep getting criticized for mispronouncing
Let
name.
Me say this.
Why don't I just call her Cacklin?
Let me say this. Anybody but Trump.
Okay, so you're
anybody but Trump.
You're an ABT guy. You're an anybody but Trump guy. You're
just like there are people that are Trump no matter what.
Yeah, which I wasn't. I mean, I was very public that in the beginning I liked Ron DeSantis. Now I'm anybody but Harris, but you know I'm all in for Trump and Vance. I think that's the winning ticket. That's our nominee, and I'm supporting him 110%. But here's the thing that scares me about that ticket, the one that you're. It's been almost a month since Harris has held a press conference or done any kind of meaningful interview, unless you count the one yesterday where Walz and Harris interviewed each other. But other than that, they have not done a single meaningful interview. So I'm curious why they're afraid to answer questions about their policy.
Well, positions. That's purely conjecture invoke fear as the reason.
So I won't take fear out. Why Thank won't you. They sit for an interview? Why won't they release policy
positions? The truth
positions?
Of the matter is I don't know.
Okay,
but I can only assume that it's what been 30 days since they they're moving everything around. I mean, we're in the midst of a historic moment in America.
It's a long
politics.
Time since we've had a coup. that's what it was. I mean, let's be honest. She's never received a single vote for a delegate. She's never received one single delegate vote in her entire life, and yet all of a sudden she's being coronated as the nominee. Joe Biden got 41 million votes, and you're throwing him out like yesterday's garbage.
Oh, come on.
Well, I mean, they are. I mean, call a spade a spade.
And the reality is 78-year-old Donald Trump, based off of the recent
At least
press
he doesn't
conferences
need a drool
and speech
cup
appearances
and
he's had, it's time that the nation start questioning his mental acuity, because the guy rambles off. He doesn't stay on script. He forgets stuff. He was giving a speech in Montana and just, like, stopped for seconds, and the crowd's just, like, waiting for Donald Trump to finally start speaking. And then he finally starts speaking again. So,
and do I need to play you some audio clips of Kamala or Harris and her doing some of the same stuff or some of the wacky? Or how about the fact that her cadence and her accent comes and goes depending on the audience?
I'm not going to judge anybody on their cadence. I'm not going to judge anybody on their accent.
I'm just saying.
I want to judge them on their ability to do the job.
Okay, let's do that. Let's talk about the ability to do the job.
Proven prosecutor, attorney general of the largest state in the nation, which in and of itself could be its own country, a U.S. senator, a one-term U.S. senator, and let's not forget the great job that Barack Obama did for 8 years as our nation's leader.
What does that have anything to do with the price of
tea? Was a one-term
China.
U.S. senator from the state of Illinois as well.
Right, but what does Barack Obama's record have anything to do with Harris Waltz?
But I'm not saying it does. I'm just saying that don't belittle the fact of what she has accomplished in her lifetime and her
so
body
point
of
to
work.
One success
so
of Kamala Harris is while she's been vice president. One
well,
success.
You and I both know to make that argument is ignorant, because the vice president.
You're
the
one
United,
who said to run
no,
on a record.
The vice president of the United States doesn't do anything, and it doesn't matter
Thank
if
you.
It's going to be J.D. Vance.
Can we record that one?
The vice president of the United States is a nothing job. It's the most worthless job in government.
It certainly has been.
And yeah, so to try to use a record of being vice president at a basis to measure her ability to do the job is just wrong.
Okay. Let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some of her and Donald Trump. We can talk about both of their policy positions, their records when she was a senator, since we're going to discard her time as vice president, even though she was the border czar, but apparently that doesn't count. So we'll throw both of those out. We'll take a look at what they've done and what positions they've taken in their past. Or where you're listening to the John Whitmer show.
The border rule that your guy told his peeps to vote down. Yeah. Okay. Are we going to break?
Yes, we're going to take a break. You're listening to the John Whitmer show on 98.7 at 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We back right after this. Nicely done on the intro music tonight, Phil. Very nice.
Yeah, I like it. I like
very appropriate for this guest. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman Group of Companies. If you don't listen to Odyssey already, KNSS already, but you've tried, you know, maybe to find us, you can always download the free Odyssey app. Simply download Odyssey, that's AUDACY, and search for KNSS to get all your latest news, weather, and traffic updates whenever you need them. And of course, while you're downloading and searching online, you can find and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and True Social pages, and find and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. So Greg seems to have some memory problems. He's struggling to identify Kamala Harris. So I will remind you that when she was in the Senate, she gladly accepted the moniker of being the most liberal woman in the United States Senate. So what policy positions has she held? Well, let's refresh the audience.
Yeah, I am radical. We need to get radical about what we are doing and take it seriously. As President of the United States, I am prepared to get rid of the filibuster to pass a Green New Deal. There's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking. We have to have a buyback program, and I support a mandatory buyback program.
I believe it will totally eliminate private insurance.
Let's eliminate all of that. But would you support changing the dietary guidelines? The food pyramid.
To reduce red meat specifically.
Yes, I would.
Raise your hand if your government plan would provide coverage for undocumented immigrants.
She raised
her hand. Where do you stand on defund the police?
This whole movement is about rightly saying we need to take a look at these budgets.
And yeah, I am radical. We need to get radical about what we are doing.
So there you have it. Just to run down what you heard there, she supports defunding the police, free health care for illegals, free college, free resources for community-owned grocery stores, free housing, decriminalizing border crossings, decriminalizing the border, open borders, defunding the police, banning fracking and the Green New Deal. You know, you and I have not discussed all those topics. We've discussed a couple of them, but is this a mainstream ticket that that can appeal to independents and moderates?
I want to talk about the facts under policy under Democratic leadership.
Okay.
And the fact of the matter is that Joe Biden, under his leadership, has created more jobs by county in the entire nation, including here in Sedgwick County, under Biden-Harris administration.
Biden created jobs in Sedgwick County?
Absolutely.
I wasn't aware that Biden grew jobs. You're talking about those jobs that all came back because they got laid off during the pandemic?
I mean, the workforce
after he shut down businesses.
Under both presidents.
He forced mandates on us and forced us to wear masks.
U.S. manufacturing under Biden-Harris policies through the roof compared to what it was during the Trump years. I mean, it's insane. If people look at the numbers and they truly allow themselves to be educated, then they will see for themselves that job creation by industry across the board, construction, manufacturing, transportation and warehousing, I'm not going to mention government. Professional business services.
Because that's where all the jobs were created.
Private education and health services, leisure and hospitality by astronomical margins.
Okay, so let me give you, since you like facts.
The Biden-Harris policies have produced these results.
Since you like facts, I will give you some counterfacts. Under Harris, the median housing payment has increased $1,000 a month. Overall housing costs are up 50%. The cost of home ownership is at the highest in three decades.
And that's a
hold on. I listen to you. A loaf of bread costs 50% more today than before the pandemic. Ground beef is up almost 50%. Food was cheaper when President Trump was in the White House. Kamala Harris inexplicably rails against Trump's successful tax cuts. However, she wants to raise taxes on people making low and middle income folks. She wants to eliminate taxes that cut taxes for 91% of Americans. Here's another fact for you. You're going to love this one. I mean, I think you'll love this one because I know how you feel about taxes and spending and things like that. You've got an economy right now that the average people in the United States say that they believe, 79% of them believe that the economy under Harris will be worse than Trump. And that's not Republicans.
Well,
that's Democrats and independents.
I know my property taxes under this Republican Schedule County Commissioner through the roof.
I would agree with.
You talk about taxes. Let's talk about that. And fact of the matter is that home values have been rising rapidly.
Uh-huh.
We know this, all right?
That's because they're overinflated.
And it started when Trump took office. The medium home sale price increased by about $30,000. It's been increasing over the years. And so this is something that has been happening steadily over the last 20 years.
Do you think inflation has it? Because, you know, inflation when Donald Trump left office was at 1%. At the peak of the Biden-Harris administration, it was at 9%. It's still sitting at 3%. Are they not responsible for that?
Let's not discount the fact that we are still recovering from a pandemic.
Oh, my gosh.
And the fact of the matter is, it's
the pandemic's fault.
When you look at the pandemic that happened.
All we need is 3 weeks to end the curve.
When you look at the pandemic that actually started in 2019, but they didn't tell the world about it until 2020.
It's a pandemic's fault.
And the first 2 years of the Biden-Harris administration, there was a lot of recovery still going on, and in fact, there's still a lot of recovery.
Yes.
It's a lot of jobs.
We just need 3 more weeks to flatten the curve, right?
Oh my God.
Well, I'm just saying. We're still talking with Greg Williams.
Oh, my God.
Look, an avid Harris supporter. You mentioned the Democrat Party. Because you've got their convention that starts tomorrow.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the current state of the Democrat Party. There are already protesters right now they're estimating anywhere from 1,000 protesters already lining up outside. Trust me, these are not J6ers or Republicans. These are all leftists who are already lining out. Democrats are currently, advocating their signage that has gone up from the DNC at the convention that says the Democrat Party is, quote, giving out, quote, free abortions and vasectomies at their convention. Does that represent, and this is from the DNC, free abortions and vasectomies at the convention.
Okay.
Does that represent a party that appeals to independents and mainstream Americans?
The Democratic Party has always been a party with a huge umbrella that has welcomed in.
Really?
All opinions, thoughts.
Okay.
Do
you think the Democrat Party welcomes pro-life Democrats?
Sure.
Really?
Yeah, why not?
Because I have not met a single elected Democrat who's pro-life. In the Kansas House, there was one, and they kicked her out. In this last session, there was one conservative, fiscally conservative Democrat. His name was Marvin Robinson, and Laura Kelly spent over $1 million getting him kicked out in his primary.
Okay.
Well, that's a fact.
One thing you do very well, John, is you
recite the facts.
You take issues and you tend to capsulate them into isolated issues.
I give you data.
You can't do that. You talk about the blind leading the blind.
Okay.
I.e., your followers and many others.
you mean our listeners?
Let me ask you this. Whatever the case may be.
Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson and an organization called the Journey for Justice Alliance are introducing at tomorrow's convention what they call an equity or else quality of life platform. It's going to be introduced as part of the platform at the DNC tomorrow. It is to address what they call systemic racial inequalities in 9 key political areas. The platform includes concepts like free college, free health care for illegals, federal resources for community-owned grocery stores, guaranteed housing, and reparations. Do you think that is the face of today's Democrat Party, and does that appeal to moderates, independents, never-Trumpers? I mean, is that kind of a party platform that can appeal to Joe Lunchpail, who's trying to make ends meet?
Look, again, the Democratic Party is a party where everybody has a voice. It does not necessarily mean that voice turns into policy. And that's what I love about our system of government. The checks and balances between executive, legislative, judicial. At some point, it all works out.
Okay.
And it all gets worked out through
the three different... So those are too extreme, you would say.
Well, I would think they're a little bit on the heavy
side.
Do
you know that when she ran for president in 2020, Kamala Harris supported every single one of those policies?
I don't think she, look, every politician evolves. And smart
politicians. Make a note on the chalkboard. That's an X in my column.
Smart politicians adapt.
That's a win for Whitmer.
Even Donald Trump did that while he was in office.
So she's adapting
He adapted. Because a smart politician sees what it is and what it needs to be and what it can be and what it should be.
So she is also for banning fracking, which is a massive industry in, for example, the battleground state of Pennsylvania. She supports the Green New Deal, mandatory gun buybacks, defunding the police, and decriminalizing the border. Are those policies? This is all things that she has advocated in the past. You just heard the audio clip where she advocated for those things.
Again,
are those mainstream?
This is where the legislative part of our government is a beautiful thing, because with the system of checks and balances, it all weighs out in the end.
Okay, that's fair. So let me read you this. Number one, seal the border and stop the immigrant invasion. Would you agree with that concept?
There's a problem, yes.
Okay, that's a problem.
Yeah, but it wasn't enough of a problem for your Republican friends to do the right thing in Congress.
I got you. So you agree and voted into law.
They listened to the nominee who told them don't vote for it because I need it as a political issue. So if anybody put politics above policy,
you know how this works. I'm coming up on a break. Let me read you a couple of others. End inflation. And make America affordable again.
Well, we've been talking about that my entire life. We've been talking about that.
But do you agree with the concept of ending inflation and making things affordable?
Inflation is never good under any price.
Okay. How about make America the dominant energy producer in the world?
We are. And if people did their homework, they would know that.
How about stop outsourcing and turn the United States into a manufacturing superpower?
I absolutely agree that we need to turn the United States into a manufacturing superpower.
How about no tax on tips?
I agree that there should be no tax on tips. However, both candidates agree on that.
Yeah, but she took it from him.
I think there should be no taxes on bonuses and job performance bonuses. Okay.
How about this one? Defend our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and our fundamental freedoms, including the freedom of speech, religion, and the right to bear arms.
Absolutely. I'm not so sure Trump and his followers fully understand.
Okay. How about rebuild our cities, including Washington, D.C., making them safe, clean, and beautiful?
Not just Washington, D.C., but right here in Wichita.
Downtown Wichita.
We have a homeless issue across the nation.
I agree.
We have cities that are in disrepair, that are falling apart, and we need to start some urban revitalization projects nationwide across all of our municipalities.
Okay. So you agree with, I just mentioned about half of the things, about 10 things there. You agree with every one of them. Oh, fight to protect Social Security and Medicare with no cuts at all to Social Security or Medicare.
Social Security is my money. It's your money and it's everybody else listening. The government should not how dare the government propose to take away your and my money. We worked our entire lives. We put that money in there and the government has no right to take that from us.
I agree with you completely, and you have just agreed with the first 10 principles on DonaldJTrump.com/platform. You have just agreed with the top 10 items on Donald J. Trump's platform page.
Okay.
Which, by the way, I will show you the picture. I just read them to you.
He can print the world all day long.
Off of his platform page.
Just like the guy can't stay on narrative for the campaign.
That's
I don't trust him to do anything right.
I love you, brother.
I love you, too.
This round went to me.
Yeah, it did. It did.
I love it. We'll do this again. We'll pick another topic.
I got you last time, though.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
We'll take a quick break, and when we return, we'll take your calls. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. This segment of the John Whitmer Show, sponsored by
Odyssey, celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Americans for Prosperity Kansas. Make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. And if you need to stay informed with the free Odyssey app, you can get the best breaking local news coverage from KNSS on the go. Just download the Odyssey app today and search KNSS to get started. And of course, while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and True Social pages. And follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest news. Studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. We'd love to hear from you. It's time now for another Hartman Truth Minute.
You had your chance. Yes, a chance to elect capable individuals as governor and lieutenant governor, state senators, and reps. Some folded their tails between their legs. 10 counties decided for the other 95 Kansans' future, or lack thereof. Let's review. Governor Kelly vetoed 75 tax cuts. The latest opportunity to provide what Kansans deserve cost taxpayers $84,000 in a special session. Result? Failure once again. A watered-down tax plan. If your electeds can't balance their own checkbooks, how do we expect them to calculate a real tax cut? Topeka is no different than D.C. Stop electing the same individuals that are nothing but talking heads on a good day. The people's checkbook, your checkbook, has a $4 billion reserve balance. Let's clean out the rhinos and any others that voted against our future. The electeds couldn't override the governor's veto. They don't seem to support the people of Kansas. It is our duty to make corrections at the ballot box as soon as possible.
Wink is absolutely right, folks. Elections have consequences. We saw that last year. We couldn't get a decent tax cut. I mean, the one we got wasn't bad, but it could have been a whole heck of a lot better. Don't forget to listen to KNSS daily for my new Carry On commentary. It's you'll hear it at least three times a day, 5 days a week, right here on KNSS. Marty, you're on the John Whitmer Show. Thank you for sticking around.
Hi, John. Been a while since I talked to you. I just kind of have a little opinion about something. I could be wrong, but you know, I don't understand how in the world they could say Harris is leading in some of the in the polls. To me, I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to prepare the people to say, "Hey, she's ahead." That way they can cheat. Then the people will say, "Oh, well, she was ahead anyway," and so they'll just accept it. I don't know. Maybe that's wrong way of looking at it, but I just don't trust the way elections are anymore, especially with the illegals coming in and some of them getting driver license in certain places and possibly being allowed to vote. I just think there's going to be a lot of cheating done. I hope that there's a lot of eyes watching the election. And God bless Donald Trump, and I sure hope he wins.
Well, Marty, I appreciate the call. I mean, right now, you got to keep in mind these things are so fluid, and a lot of it depends on who the polling agency is and what. I mean, I've conducted polls when I've worked for campaigns. I've worked for so many campaigns over the years. I know how this works. Depending on how you phrase a poll, whether it's a push poll, whether you're using likely voters or registered voters, the one thing I can tell you at this point, it's too far out. There's so much distance now between now and the election. But right now, on average, to kind of give you Marty's point, right now the average has Harris at 46.4, Trump at 43.8, and Kennedy at 5. The only real constant number here is the Kennedy number. At best, the highest that he was ever at was at 5.7, and that was back in July. But on average, this is basically a one-month summary here. Kennedy's averaging around 5. He's really a non-factor. You know, these numbers have been pretty fluid all along. She's going to get a bump. She's had this little bump now. She'll probably get another 1 or 2 point bump. Right now, she's up by 2.5. The margin of error typically is 4. So it basically means this poll is tied. And it depends on what poll you go to. CBS has got them effectively tied. The Economist has Trump up. A Washington, D.C. Post, Washington Post ABC News poll has Trump up by 1. Fox News has Trump up by one. So it just, it depends on the polling and who you're talking to. At this point, I wouldn't give many polls a whole lot of credence because it's just too early. But the one thing that I can tell you that has been a topic of conversation, a lot of the meetings that I've gone to, I was just this weekend, I went to the opening of the Estes campaign headquarters here in Wichita, and there's a genuine concern of apathy. And we can't afford Republicans. I mean, Democrats, as far as I'm concerned, they can be apathetic. If they don't want to turn out, I'd be thrilled to death if they get lazy or take things for granted. But Republicans cannot afford to get apathetic or to think that this is in the bag, or for that matter, to get depressed and think we can't win. We have to get out and vote. We have to get motivated. We have to get energized. We have to do anything and everything that we can. If you're able to write a check or donate, then do so. If you're not financially able to do that, then go door knock. My wife and I door knock every week for Americans for Prosperity because it's a way that we can give back. But if you can't door knock, if you don't want to door knock, make a phone call. If you don't want to do that, go lick envelopes. You know, go down to party headquarters and see, hey, what can I do to help? And if you don't even want to do that, then just get a yard sign. Do something as simple as that. Because by doing that, you're showing I support. Maybe your neighbors will then see that and say, hey, that, you know, I know Bob and Bob's a conservative. And if Bob's voting for so-and-so, then I should vote for so-and-so. But do something. Last of all, of course, vote. But you gotta do something. This is John Whitmer. We're going to take a quick break, and then Chris Kobach, our Attorney General Chris Kobach, will be with us. We're going to talk a little bit. He's been, by the way, if you ever worried about what Chris Kobach was going to do, he told you exactly what he was going to do when he campaigned. He came out straight out and said, I'm going to sue Joe Biden, and he is doing exactly, he is honoring his campaign pledges. And now he's made another one, and he's delivering on that campaign pledge. He's going to join us here to top off our 8 o'clock hour to discuss a lawsuit filed by his office in federal court this week designed to stop the Biden-Harris administration from giving Obamacare to illegal aliens. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman Group of Companies. Did you miss part of last week's John Whitmer Show? We've got you covered. We post clips from all shows. We also post single segments and entire shows as one audio file. There's lots to choose from. Just download the always live and free Odyssey app to get started. And of course, while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and True Social pages, and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. We're still trying to get connected with Kansas Attorney General Chris Kobach. And while we're doing that, I want to share with you, I was filmed a segment. They film the segments for Kansas Week, which is on KPTS. It airs on Friday evenings at 7:30. So I was on this week's episode of Kansas Week. And we did a number of topics, one of which was the current proposal that the Sedgwick County Commission is considering to lower property taxes by raising a sales tax. Speaking of which, our next subject will be with Ryan Beatty, who's been one of those who's been pushing this particular concept. But one of the other topics that we discussed was the parking debacle at the city of Wichita. And I got to tell you, those of you who are frustrated at the idea of the city of Wichita spending $12 million on a contract to outsource parking enforcement, trust me, this is just another example of how the city of Wichita, and particularly the staff at the city of Wichita, are, in my opinion, taking advantage of the system. I hope you'll tune in. You can still watch it. It airs again tonight. You can watch it online. But, you know, Lily Wu, Mayor Wu, came to the Pachyderm on Friday and talked about it. The whole system is really messed up, and I'm looking forward to having an opportunity to give them. I'll bring either Councilman Glasscock or the mayor on here soon to give them an opportunity to talk about how bad this thing is. The current council really got set up by, in my opinion, Brandon Whipple, but also by the staff on that deal. So it's a bad deal all around. Finally, looks like we've been able to connect with Kansas Attorney General Chris Kobach. Earlier this month, he filed a lawsuit in federal court to stop the Biden-Harris administration from giving Obamacare to illegal aliens. Who would think that that would even be something they would try? But nevertheless, this administration, they love giving away, you know, our money to everybody else. Kobach is joined in the lawsuit by attorneys general from 14 other states, and he joins us now. General, thank you for joining us. Pleasure to have you back on the show again, my friend.
Great to be with you, John. Yeah, it's been quite an interesting run of it with things going in these last 6 months of the Biden-Harris administration, and they are moving ahead, or they're trying.
Well, you're doing exactly your job, and you're doing exactly what you said you would do when you ran. So I, for one, appreciate that, because that's what you campaigned on, and what we like to see is a politician who campaigns on something and then delivers on what they promised.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And, you know, I meant it when I told the people of Kansas that we'd be suing the Biden administration every time they violated the law or violated the Constitution. And that's exactly what they're doing with this Obamacare. They are, you know, they're giving benefits, a federal benefit, public benefit in the form of subsidized health care to illegal aliens. And there's a law that's been on the books since 1996 that President Clinton signed and Congress passed that said you can give no public benefit, either the federal government or the state government, can give no public benefit to illegal aliens. And that's the law that Biden is violating through his executive action. And so we are going to hold them to the meaning of the statute. And we're hopeful that the judges will agree, both at the district level and the appellate level.
You know, we've seen this before with this administration. The Supreme Court said that they couldn't forgive student loan debt, even though you and I both know that's not a forgiveness. That's just transferring it. And yet he did it anyway. But this final plan, which is set to take effect November 1st, would make more than 200,000 DACA recipients eligible for taxpayer-subsidized health plans, including almost 4,500 recipients here in Kansas. You know, Chris, there are people on the you know, disability wait list here in Kansas that are waiting for benefits. And now here the administration wants to use taxpayer money to give health insurance to illegals. It's just their priorities are so out of balance with what mainstream Americans would think is the right way to spend taxpayer money.
Yeah, I mean, it's wrong on so many levels. So as the attorney general, my perspective is, look, it's illegal. We are suing to enforce the meaning of the law and to enforce the principle that the president may not break federal law. He does not have the ability to make federal law without Congress. He does not have the ability, like a king to disobey the law. But beyond that, as you say, John, it's just stupid. Right. I mean, why in the world would you, at a time when we have a wide open border and a true border crisis that even Vice President Harris is starting to acknowledge all the things she's going to do to solve the crisis? Why would
finally.
You give benefits? Yeah, finally. Why would you give benefits to hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens who are here when we should be encouraging them to go home? And if you give them these valuable benefits, you know, free health care, which many Americans do not have, then you are encouraging them to remain. And you are encouraging more illegal aliens to come in the hope that they, too, will get the free Obamacare benefits. So it is just it's nonsense on stilts, and it's illegal. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that it's as if they think we're not even watching. Because I know that the vast majority of Democrats would, you know, voters, not office holders, would probably agree that we shouldn't be giving public health care benefits to illegal aliens, especially when so many Americans can right. use help right now in this tough economy. We should look after our own citizens first, and we certainly shouldn't be breaking the law, and we certainly shouldn't be rewarding illegal immigration. If you reward some behavior, you're going to get more of it.
We're talking with Attorney General Chris Kobach. Another case, by the way, again, example of you delivering on what you campaigned on. You filed just this week, as a matter of fact, an amicus brief asking the Supreme Court to hear another case that basically said that states can make rules governing their own elections. And what this really comes down to, as I understand it, is proof of citizenship for voter registration. And, you know, I've never understood why liberals, why the media, why Democrats are so opposed to the basic concept of, you know, ensuring voter integrity and the integrity of our elections by requiring proof of ID at the ballot box. You know, you have to have it to open a checking account, to cash a welfare check, to buy booze. But for, you know, for some reason, they don't think you should have to present it when you vote.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's right. There's two. There's ID, proving your identity at the time you vote. And we have that in Kansas. And of course, I pushed for that and got it when I was Secretary of State. But then there's proof of citizenship, which is the issue here. And we wrote an amicus brief, which is basically a friend of the court brief on behalf of Arizona, which has a.
Whoop, I think we're losing him. Ah, darn it anyway. Chris, oh, there. Now you're back. We kind of lost you for a second there.
Very much like the one we had in Kansas, which I wrote, and which the ACLU challenged in court.
Right.
And they got they drew a very liberal panel of judges, got very lucky. And the Supreme Court did not take the appeal, probably because, you know, they only take about 2% of the cases that are offered to them. Now, I'm referring to the Kansas case,
right?
Back in 2016. And, you know, there was no circuit split yet. There was not. They usually a case like that, they'll wait until there are more cases. Well, anyway, I'm convinced that the Supreme Court would have sustained our Kansas law requiring proof of citizenship if it had gotten to them. But now Arizona is coming up, the second state asking the Supreme Court to review this question. And so that's why it's so important. Not only is it important just in and of itself that, of course, a state has the authority to require proof of citizenship when the state is administering its own elections. But it's also important, especially to Kansas, because we had that law, which was perfectly legal and perfectly fine, but a very liberal panel of three judges on the 10th Circuit struck it down. And we need the Supreme Court to review this issue, because when they do, they will undoubtedly go, I'm convinced, go in favor of the old Kansas law and the current Arizona law allowing states to require proof of citizenship. And that could get the wheels moving again for our Kansas law.
The thing, again, this is one of those common sense laws. I just don't know why you would anyone would say that it doesn't make sense to require that voters be United States citizens. It's a right of citizenry. And again, it comes down to ensuring the integrity of our elections, but it also ensures the confidence that voters have in the integrity of our elections. And if I'm worried that you're going to get, you know, illegals or anyone who doesn't have the legitimate right to vote voting, it just brings about doubts. And that's the one thing we don't need at this time when there are already people who are questioning outcomes of elections.
Yeah. And it's, you know, one of the things when we were defending our Kansas law, we collected a lot of factual evidence. And one thing we found is that, and we had approximately, if I remember the number right, 127 cases of aliens on the voter rolls that we found, which are just a small sliver of the ones there because it's hard to find them. But we found that the vast majority of them were actually legal aliens, lawfully present aliens, who got registered at the DMV because they can get driver's licenses when they're here legally. And the nice lady behind the counter says the same thing she says to the other 400 people she saw that day. And now would you like to register to vote, sir? And the aliens, in many cases, probably thought, oh, if this nice lady is asking me, I guess it's okay. And so they say yes. And so the system itself sometimes causes aliens to mistakenly think they can vote. Now, there are other cases where they are willfully doing it. They know they're not supposed to. But it seemed from our research that a huge number of them got registered at the DMV. And then, of course, the candidates start sending them, you know, sending them cards and election material, urging them to vote on Election Day. And that's how the problem perpetuates. And that's why it is a very common problem in all 50 states for non-citizens to get on the voter rolls and vote. And that's why we have to have proof of citizenship.
Well, General, I appreciate you taking the time on a Sunday evening away from your family to join us tonight. If folks want to connect with you, obviously they can find you at chriskobach.com. And you're on X at chriskobach1787, correct?
That's right. And if people want to read some of the lawsuits we've been filing, you can go to the official website of the Attorney General's office and look at the various press releases, and you'll see links to our legal papers. And that is ag.ks.gov.
Well, I recommend the people do that. And I also think they should sign up. You guys keep a great newsletter and press releases coming. Denedri does a fantastic job, by the way, keeping us informed. So I appreciate all the work that your office does.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Chris. John. Appreciate it.
Yes, best to your wife and your daughters, too, by the way, my friend.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break, and then Sedgwick County Commissioner Ryan Beatty will be with us to discuss the proposal to create an eighth, quarter, or half-cent county sales tax designed to decrease property taxes. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman Group of Companies. Want to remind you, you can always listen to us by downloading the Odyssey app or telling your smart speaker to play KNSS Radio. You'll find podcast links to all our previous episodes there, and make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook and True Social pages, and make sure you follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, as of Wednesday, Sedgwick County commissioners are still seriously considering a countywide sales tax they say would go to help with property tax relief. The idea is to create a quarter, half, or eighth cent county sales tax to reduce property taxes. Commissioner Ryan Beatty believes that a quarter cent or half cent sales tax could reduce property taxes by as much as $8 to $12 million. He also has committed that the revenue from the sales tax would go directly towards cutting property taxes. But some are skeptical of the proposal and worry the money raised might not lead to property tax relief, might end up being spent on other discretionary spending. With us now to answer these questions and others about the proposal is Sedgwick County Commissioner Ryan Beatty. Ryan, thank you for joining us. Appreciate you taking some time away from family on a Sunday night, brother.
John Whitmer, my friend, good to be with you as always.
So I think I got it right, but is that basically the gist of the proposal in the nub of it, basically?
Well, a couple thoughts, and I think you got the bulk of it right with a couple of exceptions. But the biggest thing is we've got to start having a serious conversation about what does property tax reform look like. If you look at reform and start talking about how do we really change the model, that's typically a state function. And I know that the state has committed that they're going to have this conversation in this next legislative session. But the state could do the things like changing assessment rates and percentages. And it's the state's responsibility to, through the Kansas Department of Revenue, to talk about, hey, how does the appraiser do his work and what are those formulas? So the real question is, you know, what do we have on the local level to be able to really inflict not just property tax reduction, which I think is keenly important right now in this economy, but how do we reform property taxes? And in my view, the best way to do that, John, is through decreasing the dependence that we have on property taxes.
I agree. Either
just Sedgwick County government. Just Sedgwick County government, nearly 45% of our revenues are generated from property tax. And we're just too dependent on property taxes. So at the very basic, fundamental level of the conversations is that we've got to reduce our dependence on property taxes. And I will entertain any and all discussions that helps me to accomplish that.
So this is, it sounds a little bit familiar to the LAVTR program that, which the state used to offer, but discontinued after many municipalities were found to be taking the money from the state and not actually using it to lower property taxes. Is there anything in the proposal, in the resolution, because you guys don't do statutes, like you do resolutions, but is there anything in the proposal that guarantees every dollar raised through the sales tax must be spent directly lowering the mill levy?
Yeah. Let me give you a little background on that, too, because this is really keenly important. Number one, is any type of sales tax initiative has to go to a ballot.
Right.
The ballot initiative, voters have to decide. And the language that the ballot initiative suggests, you're held by law to executing it according to that language. That's number one. Number two is we've really in this community, we've got to have serious conversations about what is hurting people most. And I believe it's property taxes. I think we've accomplished and we've arrived at diminishing returns, particularly those on fixed income, particularly those in small businesses, they triple net leases. I've talked to renters in my district that seen rent payments go up $400 to $600. Many people are getting their escrows reevaluated from their bank right now and recast, and they're seeing $400, $500 rent mortgage payments due to escrows going up. This is not sustainable, and we've got to get serious about the conversation. So in regards to the mistrust, One of the reasons I ran for this office is because I don't have a lot of trust in government. I have a healthy skepticism of government, so I fully understand that. But when we start looking at the numbers and really start looking at the data, what can we do to reduce property tax dependence? John, I'm looking at some numbers at just a quarter cent sales tax, and we could see anywhere from, on a low end, 5 mils up to 8-9 mils of property tax reduction for an individual. If we look at a half a cent sales tax, an incremental sales tax, we're looking upwards for some citizens in this county, 15-16 mils of property tax reduction. That's significant, significant numbers. And frankly, it might be a bridge too far for some of the 20 cities in Sedgwick County. They may not be able to endure that much property tax offset. But my point in all of this is I will never support any sort of tax increase where at the end of the day, if there's a net increase in the expenditure, meaning if the property tax savings we get have to be greater than what an incremental sales tax will be to the citizen, to the taxpayer. If that is out of balance, I won't support anything and try to advance anything. But my number one goal right now, John, you know this, we've talked about this frequently, is we've got to find property tax relief, and every conversation needs to be on the table.
So in a roundabout way, that kind of answered the question. In other words, if the new sales tax raises, we'll just say $500 million. Just going to throw a round figure out there. And then there's going to be $200 million of that's going to be spent on X. Then $300 million would be put into property tax relief. But you're saying that you would commit to something like that, but there would be no way that you would have no extra property tax or extra spending. Yeah. You would make sure it was revenue neutral, essentially.
100%. Yeah. Okay. So the numbers, the way they factor in, John, just for the audience, is 1 cent. And I'm not talking about a 1 cent. A 1 cent sales tax generates about $140 million in Sedgwick County. 25-27% of that comes from people that live outside of our county that are coming to our county and participating in our economy. It's called a pull factor. So if you look at half a cent, you're looking at 70 million, a quarter cent, 35 million. So that's the way the numbers work. But what you said is 100% my conviction in my heart. I would never entertain this or ask these 20 cities to entertain this if in their mind they were talking about an incremental revenue stream to where they were just trying to get more revenue to do more things. That is not the heart. That is not the purpose. That's not the plan. The idea here is to take another source of revenue and offset it dollar for dollar with property taxes, because we're too dependent on property taxes.
Yeah,
frankly,
I would agree with that. I think there are going to be those who are going to say that, you know, sales taxes are regressive on the poor and the, you know, working poor and the low income and retirees. But, you know, I've talked, as I've been door knocking a lot lately, and I've talked to a lot of retirees on fixed incomes who feel the same way on their property tax. So it's 6-1.
Well, that's. And that's, John, this is what we're hearing
right.
In my district.
Yeah.
This is what I hear. This is what we're hearing. And this has become now at this point, it's not even Republicans and Democrats,
no,
progressives and conservatives. John, I'm having people in all parts of my district say, yeah, seniors in particular, fixed income, we're getting priced out of our home. We can't endure this anymore. Please help me.
Yeah, this is definitely not a Republican or Democrat issue. It cuts across all party lines. We're going to take a quick break, and if you don't mind sticking around, I want to talk then a little bit about the other elephant in the room, which is what's prompting a lot of this, which is the spending side. And it's the one area that I haven't really heard enough, except Jim Howell seems to have some ideas, but about cutting spending instead of all this. We're talking with Sedgwick County Commissioner Ryan Beatty. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity Kansas. Well, every Thursday, Americans for Prosperity Action activates the largest grassroots community operation in the country. Folks join together and phone into key federal races across the U.S. Each week presents a new opportunity to join the thousands of dedicated citizens committed to being the most impactful grassroots army in America. You can join AFP every Thursday from 3 to 7 p.m. In order to phone for freedom, if you want more information, you can visit AmericansForProsperity.org to sign up today. With us still is Sedgwick County Commissioner Ryan Beatty. Ryan, you said recently, this came from, I think, Channel 3 News, that there needs to be a renewed focus on how the county is funding certain services, such as cultural arts and parks and recreation. I think this is kind of what you alluded to as we went into the break, is that's kind of what you're thinking of, not only with the sales tax for property tax, but I think this is also sort of what has been talked about a little bit with fee-based moving away from the property tax funding for these entities too, correct?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think that property taxes, which are the most stable form of taxation for a local government, I despise them, but I understand their role. I just think that property taxes should be designated for the core services of county government.
Right. Oh, I agree.
Meaning primarily public safety, public health, public works. And the things that we do that are discretionary, we've got to find other revenue streams so they're not dependent on property taxes. The biggest examples for county government, John, are obviously Sedgwick County Zoo, Exploration Place, Interest Bank Arena. These are things that are big, large, massive assets that are owned by Sedgwick County government, but yet they're very dependent on property tax dollars. And I just think that there's a better way to fund these things. It helps to take the dependence off of property taxes and put them onto something that's actually more appropriate, particularly when you think about the pull factor I mentioned earlier, where people outside of the county are coming to use our community assets, yet it's only property owners in Sedgwick County that are flipping the bill for it. And I just think there's a better way.
No, you're right. And we're not talking about, for lack of a better term, defunding core services like the sheriff or the election office or courts or public health or infrastructure. But, you know, the county gives money to Riverfest. The county gives money, like you said, to Exploration Place or the zoo. And when you think about it, you know, the zoo, for example, gets $9 million a year from Sedgwick County property taxpayers every year. There's no reason why the zoo couldn't, you know, take a hit to that and then turn around and do some, maybe some public fundraising, or reach out to some of their benefactors, or hold another fundraiser or a bake sale, as far as I'm concerned, or for lack of a better term, they could delay some of their capital improvement projects and absorb that cost themselves, rather than putting, you know, Ma Kettle out of her home that she's lived in for 40 years.
Well, what you're describing is, I think, the level of conversation that we need to have in this community is how serious is the property tax situation. And I've been saying loudly for the last year that I do think we've reached a level to where I don't think our citizens can handle anymore. I truly believe it, which when you get to that level and there's that much conviction, you have the burden of responsibility to find another way. Now, we all know, and I you know, this, your District 3, the Sedgwick County Zoo's in your district. John, you know how important the zoo is to this community. It's the largest tourist attraction in the state of Kansas, outdoor tourist attraction. Exploration Place is phenomenal. Interest Bank Arena is phenomenal. Me saying that we need to find other ways to fund them, supporting an $1 million cut to cultural arts funding in this next budget, that doesn't mean that I don't think these organizations and these assets are valuable. It just means in the order of priority right now, we have to try to find some sort of way to reduce the property tax burden. So I think that internally from the county angle, I think we actually have five commissioners that are determined to find another way to fund these cultural arts. And I think that we have some momentum that we need to seize.
Well, Ryan, it's like you said, it's at this time of year. It's no different than when your family is, you know, maybe somebody's been laid off, or the economy's struggling, or you're suffering, or Joe Biden's the president and he's ruining the national economy. And you have to maybe decide that, you know, we're going to cut our Netflix subscription, or we're going to cut back from, you know, super cable to basic cable. That's basically where we're at the county. And right now we can't afford to give the Riverfest their subsidy, or we can't afford to give $2 million to Exploration Place. Maybe we're going to trim it a little bit this year. And maybe next year we're in a better situation. We can come back to it. It's not like these are permanent cuts or anybody's talking about closing any of these venues. But again, you know, people are suffering right now. And like you said, I know the zoo. I've been to the zoo, took my grandkids to the zoo. My wife and I love to do that. But when I'm out door knocking and we talked to a resident not too long ago, and their home realistically, well, she told me that their home had value had been increased by 40, property taxes had increased 40% in the last 3 years. And that's, wow. You know, I mean, come on. Yeah. That's not sustainable. We're talking with Sedgwick County Commissioner Ryan Beatty. One of the things I really want to talk to you a little bit about is the budget. I know this year, at least I've been told that once again, we're looking at revenue neutral and exceeding the revenue neutral rate, which means then that folks are going to, your property taxes aren't going to go up necessarily because the mill levy is staying the same, but you're going to pay more property taxes
because of assessed
value. And so from what I understand, the 2025 budget that the county is once again considering is capturing 88% of those revenues, which is about 150,000 or 150,000 residents of Sedgwick County had their property taxes go up. So my question is, you know, at what point do we have to start looking at capping that revenue neutral rate? I mean, when are we going to stop doing this and looking at cutting spending?
That's a great question. So some clarity is, there's over 120 taxing jurisdictions in Sedgwick County, which is just absolutely asinine.
You're not the worst. The school districts are really the worst. But
keep in mind that if you have the assessed value growth, if you keep your mill levy the same, that means you're capturing all of the assessed value growth. And I think of the 120 taxing jurisdictions, I would bet 95% of them are going to do exactly that. Now, the recommended budget, which we will be voting and adopting a budget this upcoming Wednesday, the plan is to reduce the mill levy for the second year in a row and not capture all the assessed value growth of the county. Right now, the recommended budget is recommending about 0.3 mills reduction. This will be the second year in a row. The first time last year was since 2015. But if we acknowledge that just the recommended budget and there's no additional cuts, it'll be the lowest mill levy in Sedgwick County in 27 years. So we're working to try to this glide path to try to reduce the mill levy and to try to curb spending. But you're right, John. Ultimately, just to be completely frank, as a business person that is a year and a half into office and looking at this as practically as possible, in order to get sustained property tax relief and to curb the growing cost of government, ultimately, John, it's going to take reform at all levels of government, but even at the local level. I look at
and the school board
Sedgwick
level.
County does. Sure, but what I look at Sedgwick County does and all the things we do, and then I look at the 20 cities and all the things they do, and I start to see the redundancies. If I just listed them all out, it's crazy. And I begin to think the way forward for efficiency and cost savings is to share more services, to functionally consolidate some of these departments.
I agree.
And I've tried to lead in that effort. I've tried to lead in that effort to modernize local government because that is the best way. If I was in this budget, John, if we were to go in and curve $7 million, cut $7 million, that's only one mill of property tax. That's going to cost, on the average home, the median household in Sedgwick County, that's an $18 property tax savings. I'm not saying that's not important, but what I'm saying is that's not sustainable. That's not enough.
Right.
We can do so much more, but we've just got to be creative and we've got to be aggressive. And that's what I intend to do.
I know Jim Howell has proposed a number of cuts to the budget to avoid having to raise property taxes, which is essentially what the revenue neutral rate is. Have you seen any of his proposals? Do you see any of them that you can support?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Commissioner Howell, a friend of mine, I appreciate his approach so often in regards to just the creativity in which he attacks the budget. Jim has been doing this a long time. He understands it on a very thorough level, and the data governs his decisions. He has 12, maybe 13 motions he's going to likely make on Wednesday for budget adoption. Several of those I'm in agreement with. A couple of those we're going to wait and punt and wait until September because they don't have real budget impact. But some of these things that he's advocating for, I will be supportive of.
Good.
And I think that we're going to find a way we're not going to capture everything in the recommended budget, but I think the recommended budget is probably 95-98% there. I think Tom did a good job in trying to get us something that, with a good structure and good framework. But again, ultimately, we're going to do the best we can in 25, but long term, reform has to happen if we're going to get sustainable property tax relief.
So I got two other questions for you. One's a tough one. One not so much. Which do you want first?
Let's do the tough one first.
Okay. In the budget, there's a 3% pay raise for Sedgwick County commissioners. Is that one of the items? I know it's small. We're not talking about a whole lot of money, but for voters out there who recognize their commissioners are already making over $100,000 a year, I think it would be a nice gesture back to the voters to say we are going to exempt ourselves from the pay raise because, you know, it's only $3,000, but, you know, that little bit of money as a gesture to people whose property taxes are going up, maybe you should, have you guys considered exempting yourselves from the pay raise?
Yeah, that's something that, I mean, the pay raise and the 3% that would go as the rest of county government goes, where they get a 2 to 3% raise,
right,
compensation adjustment. Commissioners fall into that. I have no qualms whatsoever. And leading by example and saying this is not something that that we need to do on the commission level. There's a challenge that because we're also tied to the row offices, meaning the clerk, the treasurer, and register of deeds are also on the county commission pay plan. So I wouldn't just be making a decision for myself. I'd be making a decision for a few others. But on a personal level, John, you know where my head's at on things like that. This is
certainly
not doing this for the money. I can assure you that.
Trust
I'm doing
me.
This to try to serve and reform.
Trust me, I had to ask. The other question I have is, county commission candidates Stephanie Wise and Jeff Bluebaugh have both publicly committed to not voting to exceed the revenue neutral rate. Bluebaugh actually has a voting record on a city council to match that. The last couple of years, I know he didn't do that. Howell has been opposed to exceeding the revenue neutral rate. Do you think you might, if Wise and Bluebaugh are elected, and we all hope they are, I think they will be, certainly we're all supporting them, do you think if you get Stephanie Wise and Jeff Bluebaugh and yourself and Jim on there, do you think we might finally be able to get a county commission that won't exceed the revenue neutral rate?
Yeah, I think the revenue neutral rate's a very challenged theory, frankly, if you want to know where I really stand. I think there has to be reform in some of the things that we do in order to even accomplish that. Right now, John, if we were to not exceed the revenue neutral rate, that means we would have to cut $13 million from our budget.
That sounds great. I love that idea.
I know you do.
I know. Start with the zoo. There's $9 million right there.
Yeah. Now, listen, now you're going to have a word with our sheriff, Jeff Easter.
No, I don't. I just gave you $9 and $2 million, and $2 million for expiration place. Now you're at 11. I got you there. You're at 11 million right there.
You're good at math, but 28.9 mils of our property tax is what our levy is at this point in time. 11 of those 28.9 is one department. It's the Sedgwick County Sheriff.
I know, but I just gave 40, you 11 40%. Of the 13 you need. Come on.
Yeah. There's one other challenge with R&R. The other challenge is by state statute, we're required to pass through 1.5 mils to Wichita State, which is $11 million also, which we have no choice. So
R&R, that we can help you with. Let's see if we can fix that one for you, too. Let's see if we get the state to fix that one. That, you know, Wichita State's got plenty of money. They don't need taxpayer money from property tax.
Here's the truth of it, though, John, honestly, is where people are upset is when government starts growing faster than the economy.
Yep.
That's where people are upset. And I understand that, and I agree with that. And we've got to find the balance between what is the proper amount of safety we're providing and our return on investment for safety with the proper taxation. When we get out of balance either way, people's lives are in danger or they're financially being pressed. And that's why the balance is hard. But we've got to grow the economy. We've got to make this an attractive place while keeping property taxes in check. That is a great growth strategy, and it's great for the citizens of this county to do it. So, and I'm determined, Ben. I'm determined to do it.
You know what I love, Ryan, is that you're actually doing it, though. You're willing to do it. You're proposing. You're talking about cuts. It's been a long time that Jim has had someone else with him to help him at least try. And I'm glad to hear that you guys are pushing for that you're trying to make cuts, that you're willing to look at alternatives. And I appreciate your leading on this, and I appreciate the effort. It may fall short because, you know, we do have to get rid of Sarah Lopez. We've got to make some changes, but at least you're moving in the right direction.
And here's the thing that our friends on the right, they have to understand. We need the intellectual right to step up and lead, to have the creative solutions, to present these creative opportunities. But doing so, honestly, John, there's a lot of political risk in this.
Oh, absolutely. Nobody wants to see cuts to their favorite projects.
And reform is challenge. It's hard. Yep. So we need people to listen and understand and advocate for these things and to continue to remind people that property taxes are at a level that's not sustainable. And we've got to fight for reductions.
Well, and I appreciate you're at least getting the conversation going, which is something that should have been done years ago. And I don't think we would be in this position had we started this 10 years ago, for example. But I appreciate you, brother, as always. If folks want to reach out to you, if they want to connect with you, you're at RyanBeatty.com, correct?
You can catch me there. You can grab me on social media. Wherever you find me, you can talk, and I'm always happy to try to help.
And, of course, they can always look for the Cheap Sheep. There you go. I had to give you a plug there.
Thank you, bud.
I love you, my friend. Keep up the good work.
John, take care. Always good to be with you.
We'll take a quick break. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity, Kansas. Make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. Linda, thank you for tuning in. You're on the John Whitmer Show.
Hi. I just wanted to recommend that there's a number of things in the city and county government that should be privatized.
Yeah.
For example, inspections. Think about it. When's the last time you had your roof inspected?
When I needed to have roof repairs. Otherwise, I haven't had it done. And it was done by a private inspector.
Do you really think that MABCD actually came and inspected your roof after it was replaced?
Yeah, I doubt it. No, I'm sure that, you're right. Good point. Well, and you know, there are
other
things.
Why do we pay the salaries of inspectors that don't do inspections?
Well, and the other areas, and I was glad to hear Ryan mention that, but there's other areas that we could consolidate too, where you've got overarching agencies that handle the same essential services that could be combined. We're not talking about closing things. A lot of people gave Lily Wu a hard time when she mentioned some of the city parks. And no one's advocating for closing parks or selling off parks. But there's nothing wrong with looking at delivering more, you know, better parks and improving the ones that you have. Before we start building new things, I mean, heck, the city of Wichita just spent $13 million on the Carl Brewer Rec Center, named after a former mayor. They built it in Brandon Johnson's city council district that already had three rec centers. So, you know, that's a perfect example of we're spending money in areas we don't need to. You know, one of the things was this pickleball complex. Fortunately, that was killed. But at some point, we have to stop spending on non-essential services and start focusing on delivering where we need to. Linda, I appreciate the call. Folks, I want to remind you again of my new Carry On commentary. It's a 60-second daily feature that you'll hear every day here on KNSS. It runs Monday through Friday. Make sure you tune in to the Carry On commentary. I'm having a lot of fun with that. Gives me an opportunity to reach out to you and connect with you every day. Don't forget the Sedgwick County Grand Old Picnic coming up on the 21st. In the meantime, have a great week and carry on, fellow deplorables.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity, Kansas. Well, every Thursday, Americans for Prosperity Action activates the largest grassroots community operation in the country. Folks join together and phone into key federal races across the U.S. Each week presents a new opportunity to join the thousands of dedicated citizens committed to being the most impactful grassroots army in America. You can join AFP every Thursday from 3 to 7 p.m. In order to phone for freedom, if you want more information, you can visit AmericansForProsperity.org to sign up today. With us still is Sedgwick County Commissioner Ryan Beatty. Ryan, you said recently, this came from, I think, Channel 3 News, that there was there needs to be a renewed focus on how the county is funding certain services, such as cultural arts and parks and recreation. I think this is kind of what you alluded to as we went into the break, is that's kind of what you're thinking of, not only with the sales tax for property tax, but I think this is also sort of what has been talked about a little bit with fee-based moving away from the property tax funding for these entities too, correct?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think that property taxes, which are the most stable form of taxation for a local government, I despise them, but I understand their role. I just think that property taxes should be designated for the core services of county government.
Right. Oh, I agree.
Meaning primarily public safety, public health, public works. And the things that we do are discretionary. We've got to find other revenue streams so they're not dependent on property taxes. The biggest examples for county government, John, are obviously Sedgwick County Zoo, Exploration Place, Interest Bank Arena. These are things that are big, large, massive assets that are owned by Sedgwick County government, but yet they're very dependent on property tax dollars. And I just think that there's a better way to fund these things that helps to take the dependence off of property taxes and put them onto something that's actually more appropriate, particularly when you think about the pull factor I mentioned earlier, where people outside of the county are coming to use our community assets, yet it's only property owners in Sedgwick County that are flipping the bill for it. And I just think there's a better way.
No, you're right. And we're not talking about, for lack of a better term, defunding core services like the sheriff or the election office or courts or public health or infrastructure. But, you know, the county gives money to Riverfest. The county gives money, like you said, to Exploration Place or the zoo. And when you think about it, you know, the zoo, for example, gets $9 million a year from Sedgwick County property taxpayers every year. There's no reason why the zoo couldn't, you know, take a hit to that and then turn around and do some, maybe some public fundraising, or reach out to some of their benefactors, or hold another fundraiser or a bake sale, as far as I'm concerned, or for lack of a better term, they could delay some of their capital improvement projects and absorb that cost themselves, rather than putting, you know, Ma Kettle out of her home that she's lived in for 40 years.
Well, what you're describing is, I think, the level of conversation that we need to have in this community is how serious is the property tax situation. And I've been saying loudly for the last year that I do think we've reached a level to where I don't think our citizens can handle anymore. I truly believe it, which when you get to that level and there's that much conviction, you have the burden of responsibility to find another way. Now, we all know, and I you know, this, your District 3, the Sedgwick County Zoo's in your district. John, you know how important the zoo is to this community. It's the largest tourist attraction in the state of Kansas, outdoor tourist attraction. Exploration Place is phenomenal. Interest Bank Arena is phenomenal. Me saying that we need to find other ways to fund them, me supporting a $1 million cut to cultural arts funding in this next budget, that doesn't mean that I don't think these organizations and these assets are valuable. It just means in the order of priority right now, we have to try to find some sort of way to reduce the property tax burden. So I think that internally from the county angle, I think we actually have five commissioners that are determined to find another way to fund these cultural arts. And I think that we have some momentum that we need to seize.
Well, Ryan, it's like you said, it's at this time of year. It's no different than when your family is, you know, maybe somebody's been laid off, or the economy's struggling, or you're suffering, or Joe Biden's the president and he's ruining the national economy. And you have to maybe decide that, you know, we're going to cut our Netflix subscription, or we're going to cut back from, you know, super cable to basic cable. That's basically where we're at the county. And right now we can't afford to give the, you know, the Riverfest their subsidy, or we can't afford to give $2 million to Exploration Place. Maybe we're going to trim it a little bit this year. And maybe next year we're in a better situation. We can come back to it. It's not like these are permanent cuts or anybody's talking about closing any of these venues. But again, you know, people are suffering right now. And like you said, I know the zoo. I've been to the zoo, took my grandkids to the zoo. My wife and I love to do that. But when I'm looking at, when I'm out door knocking, and we talked to a resident not too long ago, and their home realistically, well, she just told me. She told me that their home had value had been increased by 40. Property taxes had increased 40% in the last 3 years. And that's, you know, I mean, come on. Yeah. It's that's not sustainable. We're talking with Sedgwick County Commissioner Ryan Beatty. One of the things I really want to talk to you a little bit about is the budget. I know this year, at least I've been told, that once again, we're looking at revenue neutral and exceeding the revenue neutral rate, which means then that folks are going to your property taxes aren't going to go up necessarily because the mill levy is staying the same, but you're going to pay more property taxes
because of assessed
value. And so from what I understand, the 2025 budget that the county is once again considering is capturing 88% of those revenues, which is about 150,000 or 150,000 residents of Sedgwick County had their property taxes go up. So my question is, you know, at what point do we have to start looking at capping that revenue neutral rate? I mean, when are we going to stop doing this and looking at cutting spending?
That's a great question. So some clarity is, there's over 120 taxing jurisdictions in Sedgwick County, which is just absolutely asinine.
Not the worst. The school districts are really the worst. But
keep in mind that if you have the assessed value growth, if you keep your mill levy the same, that means you're capturing all of the assessed value growth. And I think of the 120 taxing jurisdictions, I would bet 95% of them are going to do exactly that. Now, the recommended budget, which we will be voting and adopting a budget this upcoming Wednesday, the plan is to reduce the mill levy for the second year in a row and not capture all the assessed value growth of the county. Right now, the recommended budget is recommending about 0.3 mills reduction. This will be the second year in a row. The first time last year was since 2015. But if we acknowledge that just the recommended budget and there's no additional cuts, it'll be the lowest mill levy in Sedgwick County in 27 years. So we're working to try to this glide path to try to reduce the mill levy and to try to curb spending. But you're right, John. Ultimately, just to be completely frank, as a business person that is a year and a half into office and looking at this as practically as possible, in order to get sustained property tax relief and to curb the growing cost of government, ultimately, John, it's going to take reform at all levels of government, but even at the local level. I look at
and the school board
Sedgwick
level.
County does. Sure, but what I look at Sedgwick County does and all the things we do, and then I look at the 20 cities and all the things they do, and I start to see the redundancies. If I just listed them all out, it's crazy, and I begin to think the way forward for efficiency and cost savings is to share more services, to functionally consolidate some of these departments.
I agree.
And I've tried to lead in that effort to modernize local government because that is the best way. If I was in this budget, John, if we were to go in and curve $7 million, cut $7 million, that's only one mill of property tax. That's going to cost, on the average home, the median household in Sedgwick County, that's an $18 property tax savings. I'm not saying that's not important, but what I'm saying is that's not sustainable. That's not enough.
Right.
We can do so much more, but we've just got to be creative and we've got to be aggressive. And that's what I intend to do.
I know Jim Howell has proposed a number of cuts to the budget to avoid having to raise property taxes, which is essentially what the revenue neutral rate is. Have you seen any of his proposals? Do you see any of them that you can support?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Commissioner Howell, a friend of mine, I appreciate his approach so often in regards to just the creativity in which he attacks the budget. Jim has been doing this a long time. He understands it on a very thorough level, and the data governs his decisions. He has 12, maybe 13 motions he's going to likely make on Wednesday for budget adoption. Several of those I'm in agreement with. A couple of those we're going to wait and punt and wait until September because they don't have real budget impact. But some of these things that he's advocating for, I will be supportive of.
Good.
And I think that we're going to find a way we're not going to capture everything in the recommended budget, but I think the recommended budget is probably 95-98% there. I think Tom did a good job in trying to get us something that, with a good structure and good framework. But again, ultimately, we're going to do the best we can in 25, but long term, reform has to happen if we're going to get sustainable property tax relief.
So I got two other questions for you. One's a tough one. One not so much. Which do you want first?
Let's do the tough one first.
Okay. In the budget, there's a 3% pay raise for Sedgwick County commissioners. Is that one of the items? I know it's small. We're not talking about a whole lot of money, but for voters out there who recognize their commissioners are already making over $100,000 a year, I think it would be a nice gesture back to the voters to say we are going to exempt ourselves from the pay raise because, you know, it's only $3,000, but, you know, that little bit of money as a gesture to people whose property taxes are going up, maybe you should, have you guys considered exempting yourselves from the pay raise?
Yeah, that's something that, I mean, the pay raise and the 3% that would go as the rest of county government goes, where they get a 2 to 3% raise,
right,
compensation adjustment. Commissioners fall into that. I have no qualms whatsoever. And leading by example and saying this is not something that we need to do on the commission level. There's a challenge that because we're also tied to the row offices, meaning the clerk, the treasurer, and register of deeds are also on the county commission pay plan. So I wouldn't just be making a decision for myself. I'd be making a decision for a few others. But on a personal level, John, you know where my head's at on things like that. This is
Certainly
not doing this for the money. I can assure you that.
Trust
I'm doing
me.
This to try to serve and reform.
Trust me, I had to ask. The other question I have is, county commission candidates Stephanie Wise and Jeff Bluebaugh have both publicly committed to not voting to exceed the revenue neutral rate. Bluebaugh actually has a voting record on a city council to match that. The last couple of years, I know he didn't do that. Howell has been opposed to exceeding the revenue neutral rate. Do you think you might, if Wise and Bluebaugh are elected, and we all hope they are, I think they will be, certainly we're all supporting them, do you think if you get Stephanie Wise and Jeff Bluebaugh and yourself and Jim on there, do you think we might finally be able to get a county commission that won't exceed the revenue neutral rate?
Yeah, I think the revenue neutral rate's a very challenged theory, frankly, if you want to know where I really stand. I think there has to be reform in some of the things that we do in order to even accomplish that. Right now, John, if we were to not exceed the revenue neutral rate, that means we would have to cut $13 million from our budget.
That sounds great. I love that idea.
I know you do.
I know. Start with the zoo. There's $9 million right there.
Yeah. Now, listen, now you're going to have to have a word with our sheriff, Jeff Easter.
No, I don't. I just gave you $9 and $2 million, yeah, and $2 million for expiration place. Now you're at 11. I got you there. You're at 11 million right there.
You're good at math, but 28.9 mils of our property tax is what our levy is at this point in time. 11 of those 28.9 is one department. It's the Sedgwick County Sheriff.
I know, but I just gave 40, you 11 40%. Of the 13 you need. Come on.
Yeah. There's one other challenge with R&R. The other challenge is by state statute, we're required to pass through 1.5 mils to Wichita State, which is $11 million also, which we have no choice. So
R&R, we can help you with. Let's see if we can fix that one for you, too. Let's see if we get the state to fix that one. That, you know, Wichita State's got plenty of money. They don't need taxpayer money from property tax.
Here's the truth of it, though, John, honestly, is where people are upset is when government starts growing faster than the economy.
Yep.
That's where people are upset. And I understand that, and I agree with that. And we've got to find the balance between what is the proper amount of safety we're providing and our return on investment for safety with the proper taxation. When we get out of balance either way, people's lives are in danger or they're financially being pressed. And that's why the balance is hard. But we've got to grow the economy. We've got to make this an attractive place while keeping property taxes in check. That is a great growth strategy, and it's great for the citizens of this county to do it. So, and I'm determined, Ben. I'm determined to do it.
You know what I love, Ryan, is that you're actually doing it, though. You're willing to do it. You're proposing. You're talking about cuts. It's been a long time that Jim has had someone else with him to help him at least try. And I'm glad to hear that you guys are pushing for that you're trying to make cuts, that you're willing to look at alternatives. And I appreciate your leading on this, yeah, and I appreciate the effort. It may fall short because, you know, we do have to get rid of Sarah Lopez. We've got to make some changes, but at least you're moving in the right direction.
And here's the thing that our friends on the right, they have to understand. We need the intellectual right to step up and lead,
yeah,
to have the creative solutions, to present these creative opportunities. But doing so, honestly, John, there's a lot of political risk in this.
Oh, absolutely. Nobody wants to see cuts to their favorite projects.
And reform is challenge. It's hard.
Yep.
So we need people to listen and understand and advocate for these things and to continue to remind people that property taxes are at a level that's not sustainable. And we've got to fight for reductions.
Well, and I appreciate you're at least getting the conversation going, which is something that should have been done years ago. And I don't think we would be in this position had we started this 10 years ago, for example. But I appreciate you, brother, as always. If folks want to reach out to you, if they want to connect with you, you're at RyanBeatty.com, correct?
You can catch me there. You can grab me on social media. Wherever you find me, you can talk, and I'm always happy to try to help.
And, of course, they can always look for the cheap sheep. There you go. I had to give you a plug there.
Thank you, bud.
I love you, my friend. Keep up the good work.
John, take care. Always good to be with you.
We'll take a quick break. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity, Kansas. Make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. Linda, thank you for tuning in. You're on the John Whitmer Show.
Hi. I just wanted to recommend that there's a number of things in the city and county government that should be privatized.
Yeah.
For example, inspections. Think about it. When's the last time you had your roof inspected?
When I needed to have roof repairs. Otherwise, I haven't had it done. And it was done by a private inspector.
Do you really think that MABCD actually came and inspected your roof after it was replaced?
Yeah, I doubt it. No, I'm sure that you're right. Good point. Well, and you know, there are other things.
Why do we pay the salaries of inspectors that don't do inspections?
Well, and the other areas, and I was glad to hear Ryan mention that, but there's other areas that we could consolidate too, where you've got overarching agencies that handle the same essential services that could be combined. We're not talking about closing things. A lot of people gave Lily Wu a hard time when she mentioned some of the city parks. And no one's advocating for closing parks or selling off parks. But there's nothing wrong with looking at delivering more, you know, better parks and improving the ones that you have. Before we start building new things, I mean, heck, the city of Wichita just spent $13 million on the Carl Brewer Rec Center, named after a former mayor. They built it in Brandon Johnson's city council district that already had three rec centers. So, you know, that's a perfect example of we're spending money in areas we don't need to. You know, one of the things was this pickleball complex. Fortunately, that was killed. But at some point, we have to stop spending on non-essential services and start focusing on delivering where we need to. Linda, I appreciate the call. Folks, I want to remind you again of my new Carry On commentary. It's a 60-second daily feature that you'll hear every day here on KNSS. It runs Monday through Friday. Make sure you tune in to the Carry On commentary. I'm having a lot of fun with that. Gives me an opportunity to reach out to you and connect with you every day. Don't forget the Sedgwick County Grand Old Picnic coming up on the 21st. In the meantime, have a great week and carry on, fellow deplorables.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.